All right, welcome back, Interweb friends. This is Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out, our favorite podcast about bad movies. Hollywood makes a lot of movies. Hollywood makes a lot of bad movies. We make fun of them. This is a smaller show than usual. This is a real skeleton crew. I know where some of these people are, so some of this I'm just going to make up. I think Brian Mueller is berry picking right now.
Berry picking?
Berry picking.
No excuse.
I think Jack is getting a perm.
Jack may be getting a perm. And I believe Andy Wolf
lobotomy.
Now works
He's
at
getting
a Renaissance
lobotomy.
Fair. That's my understanding.
They recruited him.
But I'm Alex Dunbar. I'm here to host here, as always, with Cody Wolf. And we have the most special of special guests to join us this week.
Hey, come on.
You know him. If you live in upstate New York, you know him from your television. Sports director John Evanson is here from NBC and CBS in Syracuse joining us this week.
My first ever podcast of any type. I'm very excited.
Oh, that is exciting.
And I'm treating this as therapy because you guys forced me to watch this movie. And I woke up the next morning very angry that it exists.
Yeah, not even that you had to watch it, just that it exists in the
it
world.
It exists in the world, so yeah. This is therapy for me. You guys are my therapists.
This is a big movie. I'm sorry Brian couldn't be here for this, because this movie actually played a key role in the founding of this podcast. When Brian and I saw this movie, no one really cares on how this podcast started, but it was originally going to be a video review show that the station Brian and I worked at the time wanted us to do. We went and saw Sucker Punch. It was so bad, we didn't think we could seriously do a review of it. So then this was kind of morphing into doing something about bad movies, which eventually morphed into Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out. So in a way, Sucker Punch is really to thanks for putting this all together.
Right. It's almost like, because I already mentioned lobotomy, which is foreshadowing like part of the movie or whatever, but yeah. I felt like almost like I had come as close to a lobotomy that I'd ever come to when I was done watching it. I was just like, my mouth was open. Yeah. And I was just like, my brain will never be the same again.
And you don't understand anything that's happening. Yeah. Well, neither of you had seen the movie before you saw it for this podcast.
Never.
Right?
I never even wanted to see it. Based on the cover, I knew this wasn't something I wanted to see.
It's not the type of movie I would even choose on Netflix to watch for free.
Yeah. Yeah. This was my second go around with Sucker Punch, which we'll get into. Viewing it for a second time, I thought it was really interesting. There is no genre that can define this movie. I don't know. To give a description...
It is so weird. It is honestly like, I thought at one point, it was like they took an English action movie, translated it poorly into Japanese, and then translated it to like... Italian, and then translated it back to English again, and then said, okay, let's make this movie.
Yeah.
And there was so much lost in translation that it made...
It felt like that, yeah.
No sense.
It felt like that.
It's so... Like, every genre you can think of is within this movie, all of them confusingly, confoundingly done.
Yeah.
With some interesting stuff in there. I mean, I should say, I found some... pieces
all
of the
elements were there, but there was just no sensible
they
plot.
Don't hang together.
It was like they took all the elements of action, of even like you felt like what they were trying to do, you know, make something really emotional or something, but somehow bad acting, nonsensical logic would make it just be dismissed as like, this is so stupid.
Yeah, it's hanging on nothing.
Yeah,
it's hanging on nothing.
Well, like I was saying to Alex earlier, to me it was the emotions weren't there because none of it actually mattered. Nothing was actually happening. Nothing
right.
mattered because it was all as we'll
there's
get
no
into.
There's no stakes. Yeah, there's
it's all
no...
It's a dream within a dream. It's
yeah.
Nothing matters.
And looking at the cover, you might think, hey, you know what? At least there's hot chicks.
Right.
At least there's hot chicks in this movie. But then the first time you see them act and what lines are coming out of their mouth, within like 10 seconds, they're no longer hot.
Yeah.
They're just annoying.
Yeah.
Well, let's go right into it. I found the opening of the movie somewhat interesting. It's a no dialogue opening where just visually they portray to you that this girl who we come to know as Baby Doll is played by Emily Browning. My cat is eating the note. Right now, the cat...
He's eating the movie.
Yeah,
he doesn't want us to do this
right,
one.
We'll let him eat the notes. That basically, her crazy stepdad is trying to abuse her and her sister. In trying to stop her crazy stepdad, she accidentally shoots her sister, I think?
Yes, but I didn't get any of that because there was no dialogue and because it was so over-stylized. I didn't know if... if this girl was her, this the woman's daughter, or if it was her sister, or if this guy was her father or uncle, or because you didn't know.
It's not well established, yeah. And what's even funnier is she kind of has a point blank shot of her stepfather.
Oh yeah, like three feet away.
Like right to his head, and then she misses it and gets her sister, who's in the other room, like directly in the heart.
Yeah,
or something, right?
Yeah, kills her like right away.
It would really be not dissimilar to like if I said to you like, hey, can you throw that plate in the kitchen trash can, and it wound up in the toilet? You know, you'd be like, how did that?
Yeah. Could they not have orchestrated a better like mistaken murder than that? Like the sister maybe jumping in front and going nah, or something, you know? But it was.
And again, I don't have a lot of compliments for this movie, but I do this one. I thought it was a little interesting how they were like trying to do this with no dialogue. Like, it's actually kind of the theme of this movie. Trying to do something interesting, not quite working, but it hasn't gone totally off the rails.
Yeah.
But it hadn't gone
off the rails. In fact, I was watching it and I was thinking, oh my God, am I dumb? Because this is supposed to be a bad movie, but I'm still kind of into this.
Yeah.
Because I was, you know, visually, you're right. Visually, first 10 minutes, not bad.
I feel like it didn't fit with the rest of the movie because this was the only part of it that was reality, I guess.
And the only part that had any character development. Right. It's the only... I felt like
this shouldn't have been over-stylized like this. Like the fantasy stuff later on, it makes sense, but this was just so...
Yeah.
That's true.
It just felt like this was part of the fantasy. So I never knew whether this was...
Yeah, you never knew what was fantasy,
I didn't know until the end when they...
troubling that by the time they start speaking in this movie, all character development has stopped.
Yeah, I was reading the main character doesn't say a word until 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
She doesn't say a word until 20 minutes in.
Doesn't say a single word.
But she was looking pretty.
She's looking pretty. Well, and she gets taken... She's taken to an asylum, and we should mention this is kind of vaguely set apparently in the 1960s. It looked 60s-ish to me.
Yeah.
Like it's sort of, maybe they're going for a timeless look.
Or one of those
look.
Futuristic
really sure.
I was even thinking, is this the future? But like, you know, like, but it has those like, 30s and 40s style people in it or
like
something
like
that.
Retro style, yeah.
Yeah, it's something sci-fi about it right off the bat.
I should also mention, because there's... Up to this point, there's been two covers of two songs, and this movie has like the entire soundtrack is just terrible covers of good songs.
That bugged me too. The alt rock, constantly like.
And they're just bad. They're just bad. Like the first one was like Sweet Dreams, and then the second one was a Pixie song.
Well, I'm gonna blow your mind. Do you know who?
There was a Smith song in it.
Do you know?
Sing Me to Sleep.
I think so, yeah.
Do you know who did the cover of Sweet Dreams?
It was the main actress.
It was Emily Browning.
Yeah,
Emily Browning did that cover.
No kidding.
Yeah, she did like three or four of them. I think
she did. Well, I'm gonna blow your mind later on in this podcast with some other info related to that, but I'm going to save that for the time being.
But like John said, it was annoying because there's all these songs you write. It felt like a music video. Like that's what they were trying to do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was that one like, where is my mind?
That's the Pixies one, yeah.
Oh, where is...
And that song
like,
doesn't
oh
sound
my God,
anything
you're
like
spelling
that.
This out for, like, for me and trying to like... It's like watching a Dora episode, but instead of like the arrow pointing to the obvious, it's like a bad alt-rock song.
Yeah,
we get that you think you're crazy. Where is my mind? You have to hear this stupid cover. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Well, so they take her to this asylum, the mental hospital asylum, and it has this weird theater in it where Carla Gugino plays a psychologist who's trying to help patients. There's a throwaway line of dialogue that I didn't even catch the first time I saw it where she says something like, you can create a world you can control. So this is actually somehow a part of the therapy to have these...
It was said very in passing, almost.
Yeah. Very, I mean, it's like a throwaway line.
Yeah, yeah.
And John Hamm also comes in, who...
I missed him at the beginning.
Yeah, he was in the beginning?
I didn't notice him until the end. He's like a major actor.
Yeah. And it's so poor. He's so poorly introduced. He's like... Literally, John Hamm's job in this movie is he's an on-call lobotomist. He doesn't work there. It's like, you know, if I need to have a tree taken down, I bring in like the tree. We need a lobotomist.
They did say that. He's like the orderly or the doctor, whoever, says, we don't have a lobotomist on site, but our lobotomist is coming in on Saturday, so we'll get it done then.
He comes in every few weeks
just to
handle the lobotomies.
But
they don't even, for some reason, they don't even say lobotomy. John Hamm, in one of the worst bits of direction, just does his scene in front of a giant picture, like a 4 foot tall picture that over it of a brain that says lobotomy.
I missed this whole scene.
It's so
what happened?
It's like the most brutal staging ever.
lobotomy.
And now, and this is where the movie goes off the rails. Like you're
this is where I got confused.
Oh, because I think the world got confused at this point.
I liked the bad. There was such the blatant bad acting started to come into play too when she first got there. Bad acting and bad directing, I guess.
And writing.
Or just cheesiness. I like it. The two things that when she walks into the hall when they're giving her the tour. This is where we. Hang out for most of the day, and then on cue, like a chick fight starts in the background. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like like the second they walk in, there's this like scary element of.
And
like,
it was so badly timed. You could almost hear like off stage someone was like action, you know. Like,
And then her line where she says, she doesn't even pause. She says, "Well, how did you get in here?" Oh, I get it. It's complicated. Like, she didn't even give her a chance to answer. It was, like, all in one line, and I'm like, okay.
Yeah, all the dialogue in that whole scene was just so... You could feel that it was just written dialogue. It wasn't natural at all.
Nothing feels natural. Yeah, there's only one character's dialogue who I thought felt natural, and I'm not sure if it was the dialogue or the performer, but it was the blue, the guy who's kind of... we're getting into the layers of insanity in this movie. Who... In this level is an orderly, and we're about to shift into the kind of the fantasy realm where the asylum turns into a burlesque club.
At first I thought it was like a bordello.
Burlesque club and a bordello. I think it's like the Walmart of like bordellos. Like, you know, like you tease them and then you send them to the bordello.
But it was still like a prison. Like, I was so confused.
But they were like, but the girls were being held captive in this. So you're kind of, so it shifts to the theater of the mental hospital is now the theater of this bordello.
Well, let's set that up though. They sit, does she really have a name? It's just, what's her name? Baby Doll?
They just call her Baby Doll. I don't know.
They sit her down in the chair. She doesn't have a name at this point, but they sit her down in the chair. And you see the needle, the lobotomy needle, going right towards her face or towards her eye.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it cuts to the theater again. And it's someone else in the chair. It's this other woman. And she's like, oh, cut. We can't. And it's like a play.
What kind of stage show would involve someone getting... I mean, like literally, this is one of our first introduction to the fantasy realm. And the girl's like, why are we doing a lobotomy as part of like a burlesque show? And I'm like, I'm watching. I'm like, why are you doing a lobotomy as part of a... How is that hot? That is not... Yeah.
And I guess maybe they were figuring that you would... just dismiss it all. Dismiss all this silliness because it's...
Well, from here on...
It's her mind. It's fantasy,
from here on,
right?
I dismissed everything from this point on because... And that's what I'm talking about. Nothing...
But how can you grip onto a movie if you're just dismissing everything?
Nothing, like,
exactly.
Barney the Dinosaur could have walked out and I would have just been like...
Yeah, that's exactly this movie's problem. Yeah, you can't... You never feel attachment to what's going on. You're completely detached from everything. You have no emotional stakes.
And then that. What about that chef scene that comes up soon? Where I don't know how long after she was. I think it's right after this.
Yeah.
The first burlesque scene or whatever, but that woman just for no reason, that fat chef guy, like just starts up with her like out of nowhere in the kitchen.
Oh yeah, because she wants to eat some like she's trying to get some like chocolate or something.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
And the chef it's like a crust gaining
scene because Baby Doll comes in and like saves her from the.
Mean chef. Yeah.
Like, but it was the stupidest trust earning scene ever. Like, it was just like thrown in, like, oh, let's have the chef attack her for no reason and have her come in and save her so these two characters can have trust.
Exactly. Yeah, it was so forced.
Well, the first scene in with the lobotomy burlesque, they introduce all these characters and they. Everyone has just a stupid name, just a stupid nickname.
Oh, we should. Yeah,
this girl's Baby Doll.
Yeah.
The one who she rescues is Rocket.
Yeah.
I can't remember who the other one was. The one.
Well, there's
who she's
Amber.
Always arguing with. Yeah. Then there's one who's just Amber.
Amber. Like, Sweet Pea.
Sweet Pea was
Sweet
the one.
Sweet Pea,
who's
Rocket's sister.
But then it's just Amber, which
is. And one girl's name is just Blondie.
Blondie. Yeah.
So what is that? Is that supposed to be like? Because you guys might be more into sci-fi stuff than. Is that supposed to be establishing some type of video game thing or like a comic book?
I think it's just. It felt like a comic book. It felt like her in her own fantasy it was just a comic book and.
Yeah.
It was just dumb. I hate that when they do that. It's like, just give everyone a dumb name so we don't have to come up with names.
Well, and to move forward, we're...
It's the opposite of 88
Minutes.
Oh,
it is the opposite of 88 Minutes. Everyone had 88 Minutes, everyone has elaborate names in this movie. Everyone has, like, the most simplistic name. That guy,
Cupcake.
The guy who runs the club is just named Blue. Yeah. That's it. I don't know if it's his first or last name.
My boy, Blue.
He's just Blue.
Yeah, Blue.
Well, we should, in the fantasy realm, Carla Gugino, who's the psychologist at the mental hospital, she is the burlesque
like the
coach
instructor,
slash
yeah.
dance instructor at this
She's in charge of the girls.
Incredibly elaborate burlesque operation.
Right.
Because there's tons of girls receiving dance instruction with like really elaborate practices.
Well, and before that, when they're showing baby doll around, they bring it to like a bedroom with like a big oval or a circular bed, and they're like, oh, this is where we do the business. But then that's like never mentioned again.
That's, yeah.
Well, is it a bordello or
what? Well, here's my other problem with this movie is, like, I don't know what happened. Like, when they made a decision to go with this as a PG-13,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if this would have been a good movie, but, like, as a crazy, hard R grindhouse exploitation film, maybe there's something in here. But they're, like, hinting at much more mature concepts. Like, they're definitely hinting that this is a bordello,
yeah, yeah.
but not really explaining it. They're, like,
yeah.
they're hinting that they're
yeah.
burlesque dancing, but not stripping. And it's just really
yeah.
Like
why does that badass mobster come in and like he's all ready, you know, that he's all ready to see a show, and then it's like this, you know, normal dance that she does apparently. Like no one takes their clothes off. Like
yeah, it's just
she's dancing.
He's
yeah.
enjoying the art of it all.
I guess yeah, it's like, really.
I love this interpretive dance is my thing.
Because let's go into this now. When they baby doll is very hesitant to dance in. Practice and they're like, well, you know, feel when you're gonna dance, feel comfortable. So she finally does agree to dance for like, you know, and like Blue, the club owner, and
everyone
blows
the
roof off.
Yeah, they pretty much tell her dance or we're gonna shoot you. Pretty much.
That's pretty much. Yeah, it's kind of implied,
so she's
like,
okay. like
dance or something. And can we talk about people's reaction to like how Baby Doll dances? Like,
who
again,
wants to go first?
Well, she's not. And we gotta clarify, she's not stripping.
No.
Like, she's just dancing, and, like, people freak out.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, people cannot
well,
process,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
like, what they are seeing.
But like, we should explain. I mean, this is when I started to get really angry at this movie.
Yeah, yeah. Me too.
Anger
me
set
too.
In.
When they go into the third level of...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Laughter of, oh my gosh, laughter shifted to anger when she closed her eyes... And this crystal snowflake landed on her eyelash.
Yep.
And then it started snowing around her and glorious. She was in this other scene, this battle scene. And the amount of money that was spent on
oh,
this
yeah.
movie.
Oh, just on the scene
to make
alone.
It look as great as it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And had to have such...
And what a waste in a movie. Right. Like, you're right. Like, the special effects in this stuff look... fantastic
yeah.
in a movie that has no story or coherency
yeah.
or emotional involvement or like it just looks like well because what John's saying yeah we're getting into so she's going into a third she's in a fantasy realm where she's working in a burlesque club going into a third
yeah.
level of fantasy
yeah.
where she's now
Second
in this interesting Asian temple where Scott Glenn like a video game prep scene
who I thought was Leonard
yeah,
Nimoy at first.
Same thing when
who looked shockingly
when they,
like Leonard
was,
Nimoy.
Same
yeah.
thing when I saw him, I'm like, that's not Leonard Nimoy, is it? And
I was
no,
so
was
sad
that.
When I thought it was Leonard
yeah,
Nimoy.
They really, yeah, like, they really look similar at this point. And he gives her a sword and a gun.
But is he the wise man? Because remember that
God,
wise man?
I know.
Okay.
You mean the wise man? Do you mean at the end of the movie?
No. When she goes into that snowy scene.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
She like finds her. She fights a cup. No. She doesn't fight yet.
She
goes immediately into this guy's temple or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's so funny because like he's the wise man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the stuff that comes out of his mouth are so lame. Like she tracks snow in with her boots.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he goes. Oh, I'm so sorry I tracked the snow in, and this is supposed to be wise. Like, should I take them off? No, that time has passed.
Yeah.
It's like, they're talking about snowy shoes, like
yeah.
tracking snow in. And then he goes, and then he, like, this is supposed to be wise. Like, he goes, what can I do for you? And then there's silence. In other words, what are you looking for? Do you know what I mean?
And then
his big revelation is freedom. It's freedom looking for.
And they're playing this up as this like really big, like meaningful scene,
right.
Which immediately then we go from like it trying to be meaningful to
it's just action.
A 20-foot tall samurai with a machine gun walks in. It's like
with glowing red eyes.
There's no nothing.
It was
together.
A George Lucas like Star Wars throw-in that was cut from those new movies or something. Like it seemed like these. They were robotic.
Yeah, big robot samurai with glowing red eyes.
Out of nowhere.
And luckily,
in a snowy Japanese scene.
Right. Well, and what's awesome about these three giant 20-foot robotic samurai is it's really lucky for her that it only takes one hit to each one of them to knock them down. Which
meanwhile,
is
they're
really
spraying
convenient.
Bullets at her.
Yeah, they're shooting like 1,000 bullets at her, but she only has to hit each of them once, and they are down for the count.
And again,
and
it's like...
And she flew through a door from a 1,000 feet.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
when
he like, kicked
that,
her?
Yeah.
She flew 1,000 feet into this wooden door.
Yeah.
And she just gets up, like... And starts fighting again, not even injured.
And again, because there's no danger, because she's just dancing.
Yeah, and there's
in
no
a gym
threat.
Somewhere, and well, it's in her head. It's
because
like,
there's no threat. She's getting bounced off the walls, but she only has to hit them once to kill them. So there's no. You're like, okay, I guess I'm just watching this.
You just
scene play out because she's not in any real danger.
Yeah, you're just waiting to go back to the second level. Yeah,
and also when she kills him point blank, there's one monster that she kills point blank.
Yeah,
and there's this big sort of slow mo pause, and it showed her. You're supposed to be like, oh, finally she got it right with the point blank shot.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
like, that was supposed to be like.
Like the big yeah, like
yeah. Yeah, because the first because she missed her dad and killed her sister, so it was supposed to be a. What point there, you know?
And we also get in this scene, like, this really weird exposition from Scott Glenn's character, who's like, you need to get these items, theoretically, to escape this world. Like, a list
of things.
Like, you need, like, a map.
He said you need a map, a key.
Fire,
and, what was the other one?
I don't even remember what the five items were, because why do you need these five items?
They were
a knife. And then
which,
he said, and then he said, there's a fifth item, and she's like, oh, what's the fifth item? And he says, you'll know when or whatever. And
yeah,
immediately like, you know what the fifth you know.
You're
it's,
like, yeah, the fifth item's a secret. And yeah, I seriously was like, whatever. I don't whatever the secret. I literally like I said out loud as I was watching it the first time, I'm like, I don't care what the secret is. No, I don't care.
But why?
So, but they,
why is
yeah,
it?
I don't
is
know
this
what
some
he,
type of genre that I'm not aware of? That's that is this like the video game-ish or something?
Thing,
like,
well, this
why
the
does
movie,
she need these five items
I,
to escape?
Well, it felt very like a video game plot of like get these items and like to move on to the next level.
Right.
But in like a movie, it was like so like, oh, it's so stupid.
And because
like,
yeah,
but I don't get what he's telling her in this fantasy. Like what he's telling her, because then it doesn't it matters to the next to the I can't my fantasy levels are all screwed.
Yeah,
the second level fantasy, that's where it matters. But in this, I don't know why he's telling her in this.
But
one.
If I knew what were gonna be done with these, like it was like, okay, get a key and then go here and open this, and
right.
then you open that,
right.
and then that leads to something else. You kind of like get into it because you're like, oh, I want this mission accomplished.
Yeah.
But it's just like oh,
it's like they
don't
need even...
a lemon meringue pie.
Yeah.
You know, like
say that. Yeah.
A newspaper from the city of Des Moines.
A glass chess set.
Well, they seem to be unaware of like what the plan is that they're participating in. Well, we got to say, she comes back to, now we're in the back in the burlesque level.
And this
is
where everyone is reacting to her.
Everyone's reacting like there are human beings like look like they're like. Emotionally depleted from watching her dance.
Yeah.
With her, I mean, like
well,
people are like in a state of like shock.
My,
like, I expect to see a
good,
guy like
my
drinking a glass of water with his hand shaking, like he can't even deal with what his eyes just witnessed.
My question here, and me and Jack were talking about this week, is was she when her dance was it her like going pew 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 and like jumping around like she was fighting robots or
it makes no
sense.
I think she's
doing the world's craziest. Sexy dance.
It must be because later on, Sweet Pea says something like, "Oh, it takes more than just moaning and grinding to."
I get, but I mean, like again, all of her clothes. I mean, like, what could be happening here? These people are like emotionally shaken from
yeah,
just watching
yeah.
this.
And you never see the dance. That's the thing is, you never see what
she's
doing because
it would be so ridiculous.
Right.
I think they. Well,
and
then
it's
so
such a disconnect too. Like, why is this? why this dance? Like, why she has to go into this battle scene every time she dances, and like, why is this even happening? Like, why does there have to be?
Because it's a fantasy.
I love how many times in this podcast that's the question that comes up. Why is any this happening?
Why are they watching it dance? Why can't she have these fantasies when she's like sitting in a chair, lying in bed,
yeah,
or something?
Like lying in bed. Yeah, it's
strange.
So she comes back and she talks to all these other girls about this plan that they need to get these items to escape this. It's either a horrible asylum or a horrible burlesque club. And she has an amazing line, because one of the girls is like, how are we going to get these items? Like, how are we going to distract the people to get these
never
things
Never mind, why are we getting these
never
items?
Never mind, why?
Wouldn't that be your first question?
Right.
Why the F do we have to get these items?
Yeah, why do we need fire? But whatever. She's like, okay. And
why are
Baby
we
Dolls,
risking our lives?
Baby Doll's response is amazing, and it just sums up the whole movie. Her line is, she just goes, whoever has the item we need, we just get them to watch me dance. What?
Again, this is when it reminded me of like Diego or something, because she's listing through all of the items,
yeah,
and it's like so obvious where they're gonna get the items. Like, we'll need a knife, and then it goes, and it shows the chef.
Yeah,
yeah,
and then like that's not enough. Then the girl right after goes, a knife. The chef!
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they have to, like, establish three times how they're going to find a knife.
And I think that's in that scene where they're like, we need a map.
They do, and they flash to the...
Map. Hey, wait, there's a giant map on the wall. I see it every day.
And it takes away all the...
It 30 times in the movie.
It takes away all the mystery of, like, oh, maybe they have to find out where they can get a map from, and oh, then they see it. It's not...
Yeah.
It's like, literally, they flash to the map on the wall. They flash to the guy, the key hanging around the guy's neck. And
Yeah. Oh my goodness gracious!
Yeah, so we then very quickly go into the next
fantasy
sequence.
Who is this dance in front of? When did she bust out this dance?
This one was for
the girls go and get blue, and they're like, she's dancing again.
Yeah. Oh, she's dancing again. Yeah.
Who's dancing?
Yeah, that girl who everyone like freaks out when she dances.
The one
she's
girl who we have to change her underpants after she dances. Let's go watch again.
Because he has the giant map on his wall, so the whole plan is to get the map.
So if the first one was kind of like, if you're into video games, the first one was sort of, I guess it wasn't Shadow of Colossus.
Mortal Kombat.
A little Mortal Kombat-ish, I guess. Yeah. This one is a straight up Call of Duty ripoff. Like, whoever
wasn't it in a plane? Like,
this is the World War II.
Oh,
it's like zombie Nazi, and there's actually a zombie level in
World War
II.
And it's always Leonard Nimoy lookalike, like giving them the advice before they go to battle.
The mission.
And his advice this time is
very much like starting a level in like a Call of Duty where the captain of whatever the squad is telling you, we have to go in and get this, and you guys are going to do that. That's exactly what they do.
And it's very linear. Like, you know how like when you're playing a Call of Duty, like, you know, you know what path you have to go because it's just a very linear kind of thing.
Yeah, and it tells you exactly what's going to happen.
This is a straight up, like, it was like watching someone play Call of Duty.
It was,
I love Scott Glenn's quote before this mission. He's like, make sure you work together. They don't work together. They're planning every one of these things as they just walk in the middle of like an open space with machine guns shooting at people. There is no teamwork.
Yeah, right.
There's no teamwork at all. No one even uses cover. They just like walk in the middle of the road shooting at people.
Yeah, and not only does he give instructional quotes that they ignore, he always gives one. I wrote all, I love these quotes.
Oh, yes,
man.
Yes.
Okay, here's the one he said for this one. Just before they went off as their inspiration. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. That's that one. That one's not the best of the quotes.
It's not the best one. It's coming up in the next one.
But if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything.
Yeah.
And that leaves you like pondering through half the battle. What does that refer to?
What are they standing for?
I would have given this movie bonus points had Vanessa Hutchins' character or anyone at that point just looked at him and been like, what? What are you talking about?
What are we falling for?
So in this mission, they have to get... Because every one of these fantasy missions, they're trying to get the thing that they're trying to get in the other level of fantasy.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get this map from these zombie Nazis who are zombies for some reason.
And she takes down a plane with a handgun.
And
which,
at one point.
Yeah. And at one point, even though we're apparently in a World War II style mission, a crazy futuristic there's like rocket suit.
Yeah, there's like a mech warrior, like giant robot that.
Who I felt bad for driving. These guys. I'm like, maybe I hope I'm not historically like. Were these supposed to be any specific group of
people?
They
were saying they were Nazis.
Oh, okay. Well, then I don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of like.
They were definitely Nazis, though.
Yeah. So, but like to them, to these girls, you know, they're thrown into this scene. And you know that's not what they're battling for, but like these robots or whatever, they look like robots to me.
They were actually well. There's there's a throwaway line because I think this is PG-13. They can't be shooting people. That these are reanimated corpses.
Yeah.
So these are zombies.
Oh, they were Nazi zombies.
Which is like it's seriously like you almost like when Scott Glenn said this, I almost want him to like wink at the camera and be like, "Did you catch that MPAA? We're okay for a PG-13 still. No people getting shot."
You know. But I just these battles were so silly, and they had so much battle training. It seemed like they were like expert fighters. Like these girls, like when they were battle one on one with the now that I know they're Nazi zombies. Thank you for clearing that up for me.
Yeah.
They are Nazi zombies. But she'd have all these fight moves like out of nowhere she's able to take down 80 Nazi zombies in like one battle scene.
And this is where the movie gets just tedious because these scenes are pretty long. Fantasy scenes are pretty long. Then we'll like pop back to the real world so briefly, no character development.
And then back to another one.
And then back to another one.
And the other thing is, like, all this action stuff, but you know that all that's actually going on in the next level is, like, the one Sweet Pea's sneaking into the office and just taking
she's
the
making
map
a photocopy.
And making a photocopy.
This is an illusion for making a photocopy.
But in the fantasy, they're shooting Nazi zombies and shooting down blimps and stuff. And
That is the lunacy of it. They're, like, covering up, like, an Ocean's 11-style photocopy heist.
Yeah, like they couldn't just go and distract the people, like the three people, for a second with some other
way.
My gosh, there's a fire in the other room, come see.
Yeah,
photocopy. Okay. We've got our one thing. They have to do a World War whatever one battle scene.
Well, then the next one
was World War.
World War II.
It looked like
I know World War One elements were involved.
There were some Nazi like World War One helmets on, and
yeah, you're right.
It was like
I think
a mixture.
Blimps were bigger in World War One.
Yeah, like the blimp is what I'm thinking.
The blimp is for World War One. Yeah,
maybe they've mixed up everything, and we're just like confused by it. We're the victims and all this.
I mean, they did throw a mechanized robot into the middle of it too.
That's true.
And we like so we briefly pop back to the burlesque club where like. Pretty much nothing happens, and then pop right to like a total Lord of the Rings.
They celebrate, They celebrate for a second about getting the map.
Yeah,
and then they say, "Okay, now we got to get a lighter.
Fire.
We got to get fire."
Right. Yeah.
So they remember that was it the governor or
the mayor?
The mayor has a lighter.
The mayor's coming to the burlesque club,
and he smokes cigars.
And he smokes cigars, so they're like, "We're gonna
have
you
him
know,
dance." And Amber's got to be.
Amber's
all over
gonna
him
sit on his lap and fish out the lighter from his pocket while he freaks out while Baby Doll dances while his world ends.
It is like a very Lord of the Rings sort of fantasy, this next fantasy level.
This was the most frustrating one for me because I thought on a purely visual effects level, this was fantastic.
I hate the visual effects, I thought were great.
I hate
dragons, I hate all that stuff, so I hate this one. But another Scott Glenn moment here and his little
instructions. This is John and I were laughing about this during the week.
Is this the quote?
This is his best.
This is his best quote, Scott Glenn's
best line.
Don't ever write a check with your mouth that you can't cash with your ass.
Again, what does that mean?
What does that mean?
But the other part...
What does that mean?
The other part that again, makes this like a video game is he says, just make sure you don't wake up the mother dragon. And you know immediately...
You're going to wake up the mother dragon.
They got to fight the mother dragon.
Yeah.
But as you're going to cut this baby dragon's throat to get the two gems out of it or whatever, is that what it was?
That's what it was. Yeah.
I feel really bad for that baby
what
dragon,
is that?
Too.
That's the last advice he gives her. Don't ever write a check with your mouth that you can't cash with your ass.
Yeah.
And okay.
And then he's seriously like, all right, I'll see you.
Yeah. So for half the battle scenes, you're constantly trying to like fathom what that could possibly...
Right, because...
How that applies to any...
I don't think they talk at all.
No one even talks in these. Yeah, there's no talking in
these.
And
this baby dragon never put up a fight.
No.
They woke up.
The baby
dragon's
was having a little nappy poo.
They killed him in his sleep. It was sad.
Yeah. And it's like Lord of the Rings, but with like, they've got like guns. They're like shooting like orcs in the face. Yeah, I mean, actually, this is a Warner Brothers movie. I was trying to figure how they got away with some of that, but this is a Warner Brothers movie, so Warner Brothers probably won't sue Warner Brothers.
Yeah. Okay, at this point,
they shit over this movie, though.
They should
have. Yeah. You have the mother dragon now, who's on a rampage because she finds the baby with a cutthroat, breathing fire, like burning half a city with one breath, and you're looking at, you see the girls. And at this point, you know, like, there's no fear. Like, you don't even have, you're not even like, oh my gosh.
Right.
How are they going to get out of this one?
Yeah. Right.
You're just more thinking like, what stupid way are they going to be able to kill this dragon? Like, you don't care.
Because
you know that they're going to be unscathed.
Right.
Yeah, you're like,
they're
going
to solve it.
They're going to kill this dragon in a stupid way, which they do. Yeah. Again, luckily, dragons are able to be killed with one hit to the head.
She's like, jumps under it and stabs it into the skull.
I've got it. I've got the shot. Yeah. Do it.
Yeah, terrible. And now, this is the funniest one. When they come out of this dance sequence, this is when I burst out laughing. Blue, the character, like the abusive manager of the burlesque club, he's in tears. He is in tears, watching baby doll dance with her clothes on. Carla Gugino's character is having trouble breathing. Breathing!
Like, I know.
I'm trying to imagine a dance that would have that effect on me at all. It's like...
Amazing. So now they try to get... introduce some conflict. The Sweet Pea character is like, we gotta cancel this plan. Blue's on to us. Because Blue like comes into them and he sort of like seems to be aware.
Well, he knows.
Why are things going missing?
Yeah, the mayor's lighter is gone, so he...
Which logically...
And he had seen his map. He had kind of gotten onto him about the
map. Which is the stupid how he discovered the map. Right. Like, he looked and he took a tack out and there was two tacks.
Well, I think they're also implying that he felt the photocopier.
And it was
the
warm.
Warm.
So he's onto him. And so the whole thing was Sweet Pea didn't want to do this in the first place. But her she's sisters with Rocket. Right. And Rocket wanted to do it. And so she's going to do it to protect Rocket.
Okay, but why... Just pure... This is such a small thing, but like... frustrates the heck out of me. Why does Blue come in? He knows the Zippo's missing.
Yes.
He suspects that the girls took the Zippo. There's only 7 or 8 girls.
Not even.
Are
like
there,
five.
Though?
There's like 5.
Well, a few extras thrown in, aren't there?
Well, it's like, when they need there to be like 5 girls, there's 5
extra
girls.
Ones there,
when
yeah.
they need extras, it's like in some of those practice scenes, there's girls everywhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, how many girls work here?
But in that change room, there was, when he was freaking
time,
out,
yeah.
right.
there's
right.
probably 5 or 6. He didn't even as much as frisk them for the for the Zippo.
He said, stuff's going missing, I'm on to you, and he left.
He freaked out to the point of he was so angry, no one's going to cross him, and leaves without checking them. Like, why not frisk them for the Zippo at least?
Yeah.
You don't even look for
it. Because he's totally an abusive character. It's not like this guy's going to be like, well, I'm not going to cross the line of touching one of these girls to see if they have the Zippo in their pocket.
He had
makes
the
no sense.
Yeah.
And coming up, this is in a movie full of insanity and stuff that is hard to believe. I think the craziest scene in the movie is coming up.
The chef one?
Yes, because the girls are like, we need to get a knife. So all the girls go into the kitchen and they just literally start putting like brooms through the doors.
No, before that, they're cutting like
potatoes.
It's like.
Yeah.
All that had to happen was one of those girls had to pull a Girls Gone Wild on that chef for 1 second.
For 1 second.
And the other one could have left with a knife.
Yeah, they're using a knife, as Cody's saying, they're using a knife to peel potatoes. They could have just like snuck the knife. I mean,
they're
holding a knife in their hand. But no, what they do is they all freak out. They put like broomsticks through the doors, and baby doll jumps up on a counter.
Table,
they force the cook to sit in a chair just so she can start the dance, which will blow his mind and like cause him to be unable to see anything else that's going on. So they go. She's doing a crazy, sexy dance,
and you saw 45 opportunities to steal the knife before they start the dance, by the way.
Yeah, they don't have
sexy. They could have done when he was distracted by all this weird stuff they're doing, putting broomsticks through doors and stuff. They could have taken
a knife.
Apparently, the only knife in the kitchen is on the cook, though, I guess. Because they don't check a drawer or.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't, and they go into this. This was, I thought, the worst of the fantasy sequences. They go on to a sci-fi train. Like, we're literally going through.
I forget this one. What happened?
This was
one?
The science fiction train. If so far we've gone through, Mortal Kombat, Call of Duty, Lord of the Rings, and this is kind of like Halo-ish, I guess. Like, they're on this sci-fi train full of robots, and they have to shoot all the robots and defuse a bomb.
Okay, now this is when I felt bad. I mixed up scenes. I was almost like, what did these robots must be like, what the heck did we do? Why are you, like, battling, like...
Why are you shooting me in the face?
And the guy, here's this quote from the Nimoy guy in this one, which was great too. When he's setting them off.
For those who fight for it, life has a flavor. The sheltered will never know.
That's his quote in that one.
Yeah, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, all of these are like, they were like,
I think Zack Snyder just opened up like an inspirational quotes book and just.
These are this like, one. Just I go felt like here. They were like rejected quotes from like Successories posters, you know? Like, terrible.
Well, and the whole thing too is in each mission, they're trying to get the thing that they're trying to get in the other fantasy level.
Yeah.
But because this one, they're just trying to get a knife. In the fantasy, they're trying to defuse a bomb. And it's called Project Kitchen Knife.
Are you serious?
That you didn't
Are
hear
you
that?
Serious? Oh, I didn't
Scott
hear that.
Scott Glenn says, we have to defuse this bomb. It's called Project Kitchen Knife or something like that.
Oh my God. That's awful. Yeah. That's awful. That's the worst.
And when you watch this battle scene too, it's your least favorite. But again, so much money put into this battle scene. But for stupid things. Like, she'll shoot there's thousands of bullets flying around. She'll shoot a random bullet. And for 25 seconds, it'll slow-mo and just show this one bullet shell flying off. And you're like, oh, what's going to happen with this bullet shell? They're really concentrating on this bullet shell. It's been 20 seconds. And then it just goes off the bullet shell and back into the battle scene. Yeah. Like, it was a totally insignificant bullet shell.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because this was the scene that I realized how much money was just wasted on this. Because it was all these effect shots for this scene that just didn't matter.
For the scene that,
and that I didn't care about.
And it's amazing. Like, the level of CGI in this is incredible.
Yeah, and I also, this is where I had the thought that this movie just felt like Zack Snyder had all these ideas for different movies that might be cool, all these images in his head, and realized that none of them could stand on their own.
Yeah.
Like, Nazi zombie movie wouldn't, you know, that you can't hold that for 90 minutes. You can't hold this weird.
Well, a Norwegian filmmaker held that.
That's
for
true,
minutes.
And I haven't seen it.
What is the Nazi zombie movie?
Dead Snow or
Dead
something.
Dead Snow. Yeah.
But so he's like, let's just put him in one movie and just kind of tie him together, and it'll be cool because it'll be visually interesting. But it wasn't.
It is one, and this is, and at the same point when I was watching this, I started thinking like, man, this movie's bad. But I have no doubt, as production executives were watching the dailies and watching like the animatics from the CGI, they must have been like, this is incredible. Like, in dailies
well,
form,
see, yeah.
Like, in individual shot form, they must have been like, this is amazing.
Yeah, like, if I saw a scene.
Like, a shot. Yeah, like, if you were to see it raw footage, you'd be like, wow.
Yeah.
But none of it.
Slight problem.
Yeah.
Well, no plot.
So, in the second fantasy level, before they were... when they're trying to get everything together for this dance, they accidentally knocked over a pot of like potatoes that had water in or whatever.
Yeah.
So then at this point the water has, I guess the cord
the water,
to the,
like
the
fries.
Cord to the radio that they're playing the music on is fried by the water.
Yeah.
So it takes the chef out of the dream for a second.
Yeah.
And out of his
out of the trance that baby doll's dancing with her clothes on. Can't stress that enough. He is watching a pretty attractive girl dance with her clothes on a kitchen
in a
table
kitchen,
that put him into some kind of hypnotic trance.
Yeah.
So he comes out of that as just as I think it's Rocket is taking the knife out of his belt.
Yeah.
I don't know why she waited until halfway through the dance to take the knife out. But
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. If the guy was in a trance,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, I was like, what? You haven't got the knife yet?
Right.
Like, this has been going on.
Yeah,
they've killed like 150 robots.
If I was baby doll, I'd be like, are you kidding me? I've had this guy in a trance for 4 minutes. Like, you know.
She was in a trance too, apparently. She
yeah.
Just,
yeah.
So the chef attacks her and stabs her, I think.
Yeah.
And then
no blood comes out of her. Did you notice that? Because
PG-13.
What did they run out of?
I was thinking that too. I was like, oh, they're fighting that PG-13.
Oh no! Yeah, it was pure like stabbed her hardcore with a massive knife.
Yeah, huge kitchen
Not
knife.
One drip of blood came out of her, yet she died with her eyes open.
Well, then it goes back, but it goes back to the fantasy, because I guess the radio started working, and he went back into trance, I guess. I don't know. He just killed someone, but he's watching the dance again. And it goes back into the fantasy where Rocket, like, sacrifices herself to save the rest of the team or whatever, because the bomb explodes.
Yes.
And it goes back to where she dies in the second level, in the burlesque level.
Yes.
And, of course, Sweet Pea is upset because it's her sister, so she's a mess.
And Sweet Pea was like, well, and then, so then we find out, The shocking twist, Vanessa Hutchins' character, who, by the way, I'm not sure is actually spoken in this movie up to this point, and we know nothing about, in a shocking twist, pulled a double cross and sold out her friends. Were they her friends? I don't know. Vanessa Hutchins is, like, when it's revealed that she sold them out to Blue, I'm like, who is she? I'm like, we don't even know who she is.
Yeah, the first time I ever saw her was when she was crying.
That's
alone.
Where they're like trying to.
And that woman comes in, and
that's
funny
because she's been in the movie the whole time to that point.
Yeah, that's her only scene. I'm like, if this is supposed
to be. She was in the dream sequences.
She was in the dream sequences.
Or the fantasies.
But like, if it's supposed to mean something that she's selling out her friends, I'm like, I don't even know that they're friends. This girl has barely even spoken in the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're putting in this, like,
this
they're
is Blondie,
putting it in like
way.
It's a twist, and I'm like,
yeah.
I don't care. I don't even know her.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like, to us, somebody who we don't know yet, who was just happened to overhear something, ratted you out. But like, it wasn't like, you know, like, you didn't care.
It's not like, oh my God, I can't believe that character did. I'm like, oh, okay, whatever.
So this is where the third act kicks into high gear. Because this is where he takes them all back to the, Blue takes them all back to the dressing room.
Right,
yeah.
He says there's going to be this big dance for Baby Doll. I can't remember who she's dancing for. If it's just, it's for the High Roller. That's what, we haven't mentioned the High Roller.
The High Roller is John Hamm.
John Hamm.
Like,
but they
in,
keep,
in an
they keep mentioning.
At the point of the movie, I'm still.
They keep mentioning him, though.
I forgot. I didn't even know he was in the movie.
And, I'd like to pay this movie a little bit of a credit. And maybe it's not the
Please
movie,
don't.
But like the monologue that like, Blue gives to the girls in the dressing room, like where he's like freaking out on them.
Yeah. Well, he was decent in this.
He's decent. It's again, it's like, an interesting piece in a movie that doesn't work on the whole, like as a standalone monologue, it's a pretty good,
it's an intense scene.
It was well acted
nothing.
By him.
Yeah. It's well acted by him. But
again,
like,
what ends up happening, I don't care about because it's a fantasy. So
he ends up shooting two of the girls. And honestly, my first reaction was like, oh, does that mean this cool monologue is going to end? That was seriously my thought. Cause I'm like, this movie had going.
So Rocket is dead. She was stabbed. He kills, he kills Blondie for being a snitch.
Yes.
She snitched to him, and then he killed her for being a snitch. Then he kills Amber, just, I don't know why.
Because.
But the monologue was well acted.
She stole something, I can't remember what
it was
but.
The monologue was well acted, and, like, it was, you know, it got your attention and everything, because you're like, well, what's going to happen? But you're still, like, it's still so silly, because what he's mad about is...
They stole a lighter. They stole a map.
It's so psycho that, you know, he's all like, I was trying to provide you with the best life. And this is what you do.
And they kind of build up as this interesting, like, abusive, like, you know, like this abusive relationship. Like, he's sort of telling, like, trying to be this father figure to them, but he's also abusive, but, like, very controlling. Like, honestly, there's a... the things that happen in that monologue are more interesting than the rest of this movie combined.
Yeah,
implied in that monologue.
Yeah.
Better than anything
And you're also
else.
Praying that sometime this movie will, somehow this movie will have some clarity.
Yes, yes.
You're also, during that monologue, you're like, wait a second. You're drawn in because you're like, this might be.
This might, yeah, the key.
You know, save face a little bit if any of this ends up making sense or if there's a badass ending.
Mm-hmm.
So
those three girls are dead. Sweet Pea is in a cell somewhere because she's freaking out because her sister's dead. So Blue tells everyone to leave the dressing room and it's just him and Baby. And he starts attacking Baby Doll. He's like going to rape her or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he still has the key around his neck. He's the one who has the key and that's the last element.
Oh, yeah.
So, I can't remember. Oh, he like pins her up against a desk where just so happens she has
access to a knife.
Yeah, she's taped all the objects she's stolen under this desk. So she grabs a knife and she stabs him. She doesn't kill him, but she stabs him like in the shoulder or whatever.
In the shoulder again.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's done.
And
his fight
he's
is done.
Yeah, the
fight
is done.
His fight is over.
He's not like, he doesn't attack her more.
Do you remember that, Alex?
Yeah.
So he has this
What again?
Epic freaking speech, and he has got all the fight in him in the world. He's shooting.
Yeah, shot two girls.
Shot two girls, and then she stabs him in the shoulder, and he's finished.
Yeah, which, just, again, is like the limitations.
And she just takes the key off his neck. She's like, takes, and again, yeah. You'll never have me.
It's PG-13 limiting this movie, like, as a crazy lower-budget B-movie, maybe there's something here, but to hold it to the limitations of PG-13 just makes this even more offensive.
They forced it, man. Like you said, yeah. And thinking about it, it really would have been probably a cool, like, grindhouse just B-movie like that. If it, just the craziness, and if it was R-rated or unrated, and it was just craziness, it might have been cool.
Because it's also really... I was talking to someone this week, and we were talking about comparing this movie to Cutthroat Island. Cutthroat Island is a movie I kind of like. And again, Cutthroat Island, awful script, terrible acting, nothing makes sense. But I'll watch Cutthroat Island because it's fun just to look at it. Yeah. And it has an interesting villain. And the difference between, I think, Cutthroat Island and Sucker Punch is, because they both are interesting to look at and have an interesting villain, Cutthroat Island is not pretentious. Sucker Punch is super pretentious and like trying to
especially
act like it's
the
super
end.
Deep.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
where it gets like... That's
yeah,
where you're like,
right.
oh, like
you're
it's just
right.
grating on you.
Yeah, it's
you.
Like those people who annoy you who think they know better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but they so obviously to everyone else don't.
Yeah. yeah.
But they're so convinced that they do that you can't break through that stubbornness that it's just an impossible
To think
adventure.
That it's like this deep, in-depth movie. I mean, and if it had just gone like totally wild B-movie exploitation.
Yeah.
It might have been fun.
Maybe it would have been fun.
Yeah.
But.
Well, from here on out, I am so confused by everything that happens in this movie. Seriously, every single second is like, she takes the key and then she escapes and she grabs...
She and
Sweet Pea.
Yeah, she and Baby Doll and Sweet Pea.
This is where she starts using all the items that they stole to this point.
Yeah, they use the lighter to like create a diversion.
Yeah.
They use the map to see where the exits are.
Use the map
to see
where
they are.
So they walk out the front door, and this is not an exaggeration. They have no plan. They literally walk out the door and are like... Yeah. Have no plan from beyond that point. And that's when, like,
that's
the
when,
movie...
Doesn't she come to some realization?
That's when she realizes, like, oh, like, there was a fifth item. Yeah. A secret. Oh, it's me.
The fifth item is me.
Yeah.
And then she turns to Sweet Pea. She's like, it wasn't my story. It's your story. You're supposed to escape. And it's like, what?
How would she come to that realization?
I don't.
There wasn't even any, like...
Because time was running out in the
script. Like, somebody didn't even say something where she was like, oh, my gosh. It was just like... It just came to her in some dumb way.
Yeah, because they come
up. And then she comes up with the logic, this is your escape, not mine. Like, it was the stupidest.
Yeah, they come
at
out.
At least have that
they,
dumb
they
wise
come
man
out,
there.
They come out into this courtyard where there's just, like, a bunch of cars, a bunch of people, and the high rollers out there. And, like John said, instead of, like, looking for a way out of this courtyard... She just decides, okay, I'll just kill myself and you can leave.
Yeah.
Like
they were home free.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they could have just
They could have just snuck around the cars.
They literally could have just both snuck out of there. It's
the
so
gate
dumb.
Was wide open.
It's
so dumb. So she goes up and, like, she punches someone in the face and they all pull guns on her as Sweet Pea leaves.
Yeah. And then, like, now the movie just starts throwing exposition
at this
you.
This is where,
like,
I don't understand.
Mile a minute.
Yeah.
Because, like, now this is where... She comes out of the fantasy and back into, I guess, the real world where she's getting the lobotomy.
Yes.
From John Hamm.
Yeah.
So she gets the lobotomy, and from here on, like, I don't know what happened.
For reasons that are unclear, literally this entire movie hinges on John Hamm's character who's giving her a lobotomy is like, hey, she gave me a weird look. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, that's literally what he says. Like,
she gave me a weird look. I want to investigate this
the
more.
The look in her eyes when I put the needle into
her. She gave me a weird look, which then unravels this whole elaborate, like, Wicker Man style scheme of, like, that was run by Blue, who's an orderly at the mental hospital.
Who forged the signature of the doctor
forging
to get
signatures.
The
he was taking
done
bribes for... to get the bond. I mean, and it's...
Again, another example of someone just coming to some... It's the same thing I just talked about a second ago. Like, just coming to this realization.
Right.
There was no point where the viewer was like, oh my gosh, he's figured it out. Look what he found.
Right.
Or whatever. It was just, he did it. And then he's like, could you call that woman in here?
Yeah.
And then she comes in. He's like, the look in her eyes has made me aware of the fact that you forged the signature and that all this stuff has happened.
And I'm going to unravel this whole thing.
Yeah.
So dumb. So
shortcut
dumb.
To stupidity.
But yeah. then they rest Blue.
Yeah.
But then it's this whole thing, like, again, with there's a monologue. And I think it's Baby Dallas just saying, like, whose story was it? Like, well, it's a weird thing.
You know, and it's supposed and to it be deep. I guess what they're trying, like, it's supposed to be, like, every people, you know, that whole thing where you run into certain people in your life.
Right, where you think you're the hero of your own story. Kind of,
everyone is intertwined in this
angels kind of theme that they're kind of working through it of, like,
yeah,
that they were.
But that might have been an interesting story, like, in a legitimate movie, like, you think you're the hero of your own story, your own life, but maybe you're not.
And in a movie where you care about the characters.
Right. If it's like a real movie,
right.
Not just a CGI fest.
Yeah.
But this is where, I get even more confused, because then it goes to Sweet Pea getting on a train.
Getting on a bus.
On a bus, where, of course, Scott Glenn is the bus driver.
And did you notice, I only caught this the second time through. The kid, like, a kid, I don't even know why they included this, because only people, no one, oh God, they were probably planning on people seeing this twice. A kid gets off the bus and looks at Sweet Pea, and it's the kid whose helmet she lifted in the World War II crazy fantasy sequence.
Oh, really?
I can't even believe I remembered this or caught this. It's such a dumb moment. Yeah.
That's supposed to be... But I think I don't think that's supposed to be noticed on the second viewing. I think that that's supposed to be this, like, poignant, like, oh my gosh, there's the kid, you know?
It's a terrible callback.
Does this woman exist, though? I mean, does Sweet Pea, is this back in Baby Doll's head, or is this in reality? Because they do mention something about, in the reality level, about Sweet Pea stabbing an orderly and helping two girls escape or something.
I think Zack Snyder is saying it's in reality.
But Scott Glenn's there, and he knows what's going on, and the kid's there.
Scott Glenn knows what's going on. Yeah,
Scott Glenn was never known as anybody else except someone in that third-tier fantasy. Right.
And you don't see Sweet Pea at all in reality either. In the beginning of the movie, you don't see her.
The other thing that I'm not, still to this moment, not totally clear on is... When it goes back to John Hamm and the lobotomy and all that stuff, is that heading back to the second tier reality, or is that going to a new fourth tier reality?
No, that's back to the...
I think it might be another...
I think it's back to the first tier in the mental hospital. That's back to the first,
you're right. Yeah. First, second is burlesque.
And third is video game.
Is the battles.
Yeah.
It's Inception, I'm telling
you. So, it's like... It really is like Inception for dummies.
It is.
You know, I mean, for...
And I had just watched Inception.
Back to the first tier, though. Because the second tier is where the whole plan develops to get all of these things and escape.
Well, this is where it's so dumb. Because it's so dumb why they're developing the plan in... Like, why in the fantasy realm are they developing a plan for what's supposedly...
But it's already...
You see a little bit in the John Hamm scene... That there was a fire at the mental hospital.
Right.
That all the stuff that was going on in the burlesque escape
had already happened.
It's really dumb.
But it had already happened.
It really
though.
Makes it confusing.
Yeah.
If it happened, it had already happened, because all this takes place, the burlesque stuff takes place in a few seconds between when he's bringing the needle to her eye and when he.
Which is also. Right.
So it all already happened.
I think she's just replaying it.
It's
been a flash forward. It's so dumb. I mean, this
is... It's funny.
Is,
when you maybe. Sit down... Yeah. Let's put it this way. When you sit down and we're, you're hearing our discussions now and you actually talk about it, let's give this movie at least that amount of credit. It's so silly, but at least we're sitting here, like, trying to unravel it. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I was going to say. Like, this was my second time around.
But when you're watching it, it's not as entertaining as it seems right now.
Well, my first time watching it, I found it infuriating. I was telling Cody this before we went on, that the second time around, I felt bad for it. Like, I felt bad for the film because it clearly had lofty goals and a lot of money and a lot of talent went into it. And I sort of, like, pitied this movie because I'm like, God, like, for the goals this had and what it's trying to do, like, this is a crushing
failure. Well, plus it's Zack Snyder and Zack, I mean,
well, let me put this out there,
good movies and...
as you, off Alex's point that he just made, remember I started this podcast by saying to me this movie seemed like an English movie that was translated into Japanese, that was then translated into Italian, and then badly translated back into English. Do you think that maybe that sort of happened? Do you think with the PG-13, with too many people getting involved?
I think it was, with all the different layers.
This is what was spit out. And it was nothing the way they wanted it to be.
I'm about to blow your minds.
Yeah. I think it was originally supposed to be an R-rated movie, right? He originally said he was going to make it formatted as an R-rated movie.
Now, if you're at home listening to this, make sure you're sitting down. And you two guys have seen this movie. Sit down.
I'm going
to
stand
this
up.
This is true. What I'm about to tell you is true. This movie, while they were shooting it and into editing, was a musical. Think about that. Think about that. There is a deleted true story. I'm going to play it for you after the podcast. In the credits of this movie, because when
I saw this in the theater, Brian and I
stayed through the credits, and you start seeing clips of a musical number with Blue and Carla Gugino singing like Love is a Drug, and they're doing it in character. She's singing it in her crazy Russian accent.
Imagine adding a musical element to this. Oh my God.
And remember, Emily Browning sings some of the songs on the soundtrack.
Yeah, she sings
like people who were on set for this movie have confirmed.
Oh my goodness.
This was a musical,
dude. If this had been a musical, it would have been the brand new cult movie, like Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I think
Zack Snyder's career would have been over though.
I really believe, because there's a scene, maybe we can link to it on our Facebook page or something. There was an extended musical number that introduced the concept of the bordello slash burlesque club.
Maybe that's why it's so confusing, because they took all that exposition out.
They did take that out.
Imagine, like, if you know, West Side Story or The Sound of Music, but they took the music out of it.
Right.
Imagine how that movie would be.
That's what I think this is. Because in this music video for this scene that was in it, they do make it very clear this is a bordello. They clarify that this is definitely a bordello. But it's a musical. They're singing songs in character. I mean, I am trying to fathom how insane that would have been. Apparently, the extended cut you can get on Blu-ray has one musical number put back into it. So, but there had to be musical numbers for the other Emily Browning songs. I mean, there's no reason she would have sung them. Right. If those weren't musicals numbers too,
it definitely sounds like
this was one thing, and then it went through a million different phases, and it came out like, a four-sided egg.
It did.
They made it, really did. It came out as total insanity.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, Emma Stone was originally cast in this in the Amber part. Great decision by her to get out of this. That is like the stabbiest.
I was shocked when I saw John Hamm. And again, I swear to you, I did not see him for the first time since that last scene, which cracked me up. Because if I had noticed him earlier, it wouldn't have been as funny. I'm watching this this horrific film, and then at like the 1:45 mark of it, Don Draper shows up, and I'm like, what?
I saw his name in the opening credits.
They actually put him in the credits. Man.
Yeah.
Talk about not establishing somebody. You got a big star like that, and like you don't even establish them well enough.
He has one line, I think, too, and it's that she gave me a weird look.
That's his only line in the movie. Yeah. Well, he was big into cameos, because he cameoed in the A-Team movie, too.
Oh, okay.
He was big into doing those like tiny cameos. Well, let's do a quick game of So Wrong It's Right. This is the game we do every week where we're going to ask a question, John and Cody. I'm going to give you multiple scenarios. One of these quotes from Zack Snyder is true.
Oh, okay.
On how Zack Snyder described the film. One of these is true. The others I made up.
Oh, so this is stuff that they said in articles or whatever?
Yeah, this is a quote he gave. Because, you know, like everyone loves to describe like, we were making a movie, and I might be like, oh, it's like, you know, G.I. Jane meets High School Musical.
Okay,
they love to describe movies as like in comparison to other movies.
Right, right.
So one of these was how director Zack Snyder described this as, described the film. It's either Pan's Labyrinth meets Singing in the Rain, The Matrix meets Moulin Rouge, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with sexy outfits and guns, or Alice in Wonderland with machine guns. Let me run through those one more time.
Oh, man.
One of these is true. Pan's Labyrinth meets Singin' in the Rain. The Matrix meets Moulin Rouge. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Sexy Outfits and Guns. Or Alice in Wonderland with Machine Guns.
Okay, let me ask you this. Those four selections.
One is real.
One is real. And that's the who described the director?
Zack Snyder. Yeah.
The guy directed. And are any of the other ones ways that other people describe
no,
the movie?
No, I made up all the other ones myself.
Okay. I would hope that he said, I think I know what, this is not what I think he said, but I hope that he said Moulin Rouge meets
The Matrix.
The Matrix, because that makes sense. But I have a feeling he said Alice in Wonderland with Machine Guns.
Okay.
Mine was a toss-up between that one and the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. So I'll go with C, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with, what was it, Sexy Outfits and Guns.
With Sexy Outfits and Guns.
I'll go with that one, just so we don't have
a... For the first time, we have a guest who has won So Wrong It's Right. It was Alice in Wonderland with Guns. And it is worse, because honestly, had he said The Matrix meets Moulin Rouge, that would have actually been the most... I made that one up, but it's probably the most accurate way to describe this crazy movie.
Sure. And again, I just want to make it clear, like, I don't know as much about movies as you guys do. And you probably know all the other movies that Zach, what's his
direct? Zack Snyder. Well, you know, like 300. He made 300.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He did the Dawn of the Dead remake.
He made
Dawn of the Watchmen.
Because like he made that crazy like owl movie. What's it called? Like The Guardians of Gahuli. You know what they are? Like the owls.
Yeah.
It's like a kids movie.
But what I'm saying is, like, who am I to be a critic? This guy puts like...
Well, he's done good movies, yeah.
Yeah, he does. He knows what he's doing. You know, he puts all this work into it, and who am I to sit here and like make fun of it? But like, I truly think that I can't express it enough. I think that this movie just got lost halfway through and it just did not, it was so wrong, and he probably even knew it. He might have even known it.
I think at some point in the editing, when they were taking this from a musical to not a musical, they had to have known, we are off the rails. Like, we have serious problems here. I mean, like, that's as dramatic an adjustment as I think a major studio film has had in the modern era. Like, when I read that, I was like, holy cats. And this is, we're going to do our other quick thing. This is our other segment we love. Loved It, which are real reviews from IMDb. And to defend Loved It, I would always say there is no wrong reason to like a film. And I didn't really like this film, but it's so visual and so off the wall. I can understand why people would watch this film.
I could imagine the type of person who would like this movie. Someone who's just like big guns and big explosions and girls and outfits.
And super visual.
Bjork and all that alt music. You could picture
people who like
14-year-old, like, you know.
Just someone who wants to watch a mindless movie. And
the music was cool.
And I could see that. So I try to take some reviews. Like, there were just a lot of reviews of people who were just like, hey, this movie had crazy visuals. I dug it. Like, you know, and that's true. But these are some slightly different reviews from IMDb. The first is from iMagic Digital.
Are we guessing which one's real?
No, these are real.
Oh, these are real.
Yeah, these are real. iMagic Digital from New Jersey. And their review is, I do my best to maintain the punctuation in these reviews, as we always say. Sucker Punch is a knockout. A visual masterpiece with enough story and acting to make it feel substantial. If you combine heavy metal, Suspiria, Tron, Kill Bill, Big Trouble in Little China, along with the visual flair of 300, you end up here. To call this film psychedelic is to make the understatement of the year. Gets a 10 from me. I hope this trend towards intellectually stimulating special effects extravaganzas continues. That is an odd, I love that phrasing.
Who is that? Who says these?
He's just a user on IMDb. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Just
intellectually stimulating special effects extravaganzas.
That's a lot of words I wouldn't use to describe this film.
Not to mention bad act or great act, just enough acting and story.
Yeah.
There's a car. There seems to be a car. Is that Zach outside right now?
Oh, maybe. Oh, Zack Snyder's here to beat us up.
I'm making Superman.
Yeah. Warner Brothers didn't take the keys away from me. I'm still on Superman. This next one is a lot of fun. I'm taking an excerpt from this review because this is a really lengthy IMDb review, but I'm taking the middle of it from Harris128 from Greece. So they're from Greece. There maybe have been a slight language barrier.
So a fifth loss in translation.
Could be.
The next tier of, you know, there's all these tiers in the movie.
And again, I know I said it once for no reason at all. I'm going to clarify that I am maintaining the punctuation in the review. I don't know why I'm prefacing this with that. It's probably totally unrelated to the review I'm about to read. While watching this film, I could image of an old person in a peaceful place talking to me about life and my inner personality that controls my mind. Just like an angel, sometimes it is hard to face the truth that comes up from our soul. Sometimes we know it is hard to look at ourselves, to put up a fight to our ego. What is the reality we have to defend? And what is the true meaning of the word reality? Who teaches us what is real and how to laugh at lies? Who chains us? And who holds the key that can set us free? Thank you, Harris128 from Greece. That is a haunting review that will stick with me for many years to come.
Oh my goodness.
That's such a generic review. You can use that for any film.
It's so disturbing. Like, I feel like I got an insight into this guy's very dark mind as he wrote about a movie.
If there's five items that I need to gather up today to make my life worth living.
Like, I just want to say, Harris128, you do not have to worry about getting a lobotomy. Like, you are safe. You do not have to break out of wherever you live. We will not lobotomize you.
That is awesome.
I think that's this episode. You guys have anything else you want to bring up on this?
I just wanted to say that I had watched Inception like a week before I watched this one. This just felt like a bad, bad version of Inception. Like, yeah. the concepts they're trying to do the same. I read some review somewhere too where someone said that this was better than Inception's concept of the multiple layers of reality, and I don't see that at all.
No, it is not. Yeah, that's a tough watch, because Inception is like, this is Sucker Punch is like a homeless man's Inception. It's not even like a poor man's Inception. Like, it's
I'm
like
just happy that you guys saw a lot of this the same way I did, because I don't usually watch this genre of movie.
You don't usually watch intellectually stimulating special effects extravaganzas?
Even just sort of, even a lot of sci-fi, you know, like video game-ish action, you know. And I could have watched this. I could have tuned into HBO if we hadn't have done this and thought, wow, there's a whole different world going on out there that like people are into this. But like to know that it was one of your movies that you wanted to review, if it's on Stop the Movie,
That's right.
I'm feeling a little bit better about this world.
That's right. That's right. big stuff coming up. Well, first let's do, as always, if you haven't liked our Facebook page on our Stop the Movie, I Want to Get Out page on Facebook, give that a like. And you can also follow some of us on Twitter. John, you're on Twitter, right?
Yes, at CNY Evenson, EVENSON.
That's right. And you can see John, if you live in upstate New York, in the greater Syracuse, Watertown, Utica area, all around upstate New York, he is the one bringing you your sports every night on CNY Central.
We cleared that up now. So why was I reviewing a movie?
Right. And our special guest helping us hold down the fort this week. Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter at @windupfilms.
I think John was here. Otherwise, it'd just be you and I. Just
I know. Yeah.
Hey guys, it's so fun though. Invite me back, man.
Yeah, oh, you definitely will have it. You back on. We'll definitely have you back on. Yeah, maybe with a less sci-fi movie. We should. Oh, you would be really good for like a crazy drama.
Imagine
if we'd had John in for a little bit of heaven. Oh, that would have been a good one for you too. Yeah.
I saw a good comedy last night. That are people talking about this Casa de Mon?
Oh, Casa de Mi Padre.
Casa de Mi Padre.
Yeah, with Will Ferrell, right? It's all.
It was absurdly funny.
Is it really good? I really
right
want to see
alley.
That. That seems like a good movie.
Yeah, no, it's good as heck. Yeah, it's just. You
that's
know.
The funny thing. I don't get to see enough good movies now. I watch a ton.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You get, it's kind of addicting to watch.
I
bad
saw
ones.
The Dark Knight Rises, and I was like, "Wow!" I was like devouring it like a starving man.
Gone with the Wind.
But we will be back very soon. I believe our next episode, an upcoming episode. I've already watched it. I actually took notes on it already. Is the Hulk Hogan classic No Holds Barred? This is a film starring Hulk Hogan as a wrestler from 1989. If you want to watch that film in advance, you'll be able to follow along with us in that episode. It is crazy.
I can't wait to watch that one.
It is really crazy. Very excited to do that movie. But yeah, we will be back soon with more episodes, more guests, more bad movies, more bad reviews, and I think that's it.
Hopefully the reviews are good. But
hopefully the reviews are good. Oh, and I did one thing. Wanted to thank the people who had left us a good review on iTunes. Really grateful. If you enjoy the show, please take a second to leave us a review on iTunes. Appreciate those so much. Or if you get a chance to subscribe on iTunes, it's a free subscription on iTunes, completely free. Really, really helps us out.
So can we finally stop this movie and get out?
We can't stop this movie. Oh, we can't get out.
I've been waiting for 3 days.
Unfortunately, we're just going to another level of reality. We are just, yeah. We are going to a
Alex,
crazy...
Alex, you
going to
dance for us?
Yeah, we're going to a crazy burlesque club reality at this point. So that is it. That's this week's episode. We'll see you back here next time.